Hi, Jeff. I am so thrilled to get to speak with you. I have been such an admirer of your work, going back to Who is Clark Rockefeller?
Well,
A long way back. The diversity of your compositions, what you did with something like that, which is why I really took note of you. And then all the great Christmas and Hallmark movies that you've done. Just such range and diversity, and then features like Butter and Dirty Girl. I mean, you tackle emotion through music, different genres, you mix it up, and you do all of that here just so exquisitely with Palm Royale. And the musical blend that you give us, blending the decades with post-World War II, some big band sounds. We've got the froth of the 1960s, like a Doris Day Rock Hudson movie, the kind of music Frank Duvall would put out. We've got some Matt Helm kind of Murderers Row spy notes, a la, Lalo Schifrin or Hugo Montenegro. And then jazz is stunning. And then you give us the Latin jazz influences. You have not missed a beat here, Jeff. Not at all. Where do you start? This is a 10-episode series. You have a plethora of characters, and I'm picking up you definitely have motifs that go with many of the characters. And then you tweak that, and this is and your instrumentation comes in, and thankfully you went with live musicians, live orchestras, live jazz. And then that really helps hone it in and define it for the emotional pinpoint at a moment. How do you even begin knowing you got 10 hours of music you've got to come up with? Right.
Shows for which there's a more of a one-to-one ratio, but on a show like this, luckily it's not quite so much music, but it's still a very ambitious undertaking, and it was equal parts thrilling and terrifying when we began. It was a really exciting opportunity, but the kind of opportunity that is really daunting. I was, I really felt the pressure to live up to the challenge that was being put to me by Abe Silvius when he called me and started telling me about the show and wanted me to work on it. So it was, yeah, I was very excited, but it was all hands on deck and straight to work and lots of long days and late nights and I had a great team working with me that I could rely on, so that helps a lot. And I had a great collaborator in Abe and the filmmakers that were working on the show. It was a very fruitful collaboration, so that helped a lot.
Now, what kind of direction did you get from Abe and the individual directors and producers in terms of what they wanted musically? Did they just say, hey, we're 1969, Palm Beach, give us that? Or did they get more specific to give you more guidance?
And also a little bit cryptic and obscure. So Abe's talked about having drawn a lot of influence from the photography of Slim Aaron, and he I'm sure he gave those that photographic reference to the designers and to the directors, but he also gave it to me. And in the really early days, a little else to go on. So it was up to me to kind of to take a dive into the source material. I mean, I made the mistake of reading the book, and I took it as a really great opportunity. I apologize if you can hear the dog barking in the background, but it was a great opportunity to do a deep dive into the original sources for the for that epoch. And luckily, it wasn't, to be an all-inclusive survey of all the music that was happening, everywhere in 1969. 1979. This was kind of a specific, and that's what the photographs, I think, speak to. Mm-hmm. It was this very specific enclave of society. And so I was interested in kind of what music was important to them and what music spoke to their experience. So I started by listening to that. And then from there, for me, it's about developing thematic material for the characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and luckily for me, these characters are amazing. They're and so vivid, brought to life in such a vibrant way by these amazing actors and actresses. So that was very, very inspiring. You know, the performances on the screen were very inspiring to help me generate, you know, thematic material for the characters.
I would be remiss not to ask you about one inspiring performance and the themes, the motifs that accompany her, and that is Carol Burnett as Norma. You know, here is a woman who spends, well, 6 episodes lying there in a coma, then wakes up, can't talk, can't move, and it's just slight facial expressiveness, and particularly her eyes, which are conveying physical emotion. But how do you musically write for a character like that, who then soars in the final 2 episodes?
Oh, so you've seen the whole thing, so I can talk about the whole thing.
Yes, I've seen all 10.
Great. So I mean, what a roller coaster ride in terms of plot twists. So knowing where we're headed, I mean, it's amazing, you know, that in the first couple of episodes, you know, Carol Burnett is doing what she's doing with her eyelid, and to watch her kind of come to life and just become more and more murderous as she awakens over the course of the 10 episodes is fantastic. So knowing that where we're headed, you know, one of the original briefs for the music was kind of something to the effect of, you know, Henry Mancini meets Bernard Herrmann, mm-hmm. Latin, right? And so where Norma ends up is really in the world of Bernard Herrmann.
Yes.
And so we wanted to, but, you know, but she's also kind of, you know, the old guard of the Palm Royal Society. And so, you know, we wanted to, you know, bring to bear the, you know, the jazz, you know, probably the previous decade, you know, that spoke more to her character, or even a decade before that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like to have instrumental colors that I can, you know, can attach to the characters. And be able to draw connections, and so the whole Delacorte family to me is clarinets.
Mm-hmm.
Maxine is actually an E flat clarinet. You know, you think about the instrument that Mancini used in like Baby Elephant Walk, that really high.
Yes.
You know, because she's walking this tight wire act, the whole thing. So for her, she's the highest, smallest instrument, and then Norma is actually a contrabass clarinet, the lowest foundational member of that single reed family. The accordion makes sound in the same way the clarinets make sound, and so the accordion speaks to her, and so we start sprinkling in her theme. You know, the first scene that she's in when mm-hmm. Maxine is stealing jewelry from her. But it comes to fruition, you know, by episode 8 when she's pushing people off of boats and really, coming back to her full power as a character.
The musical progression of Norma and what you had to consider was on screen is just amazing, because you really do give her even more colors through the music and the instrumentation. I'm glad you mentioned the clarinets, because I love instrumentation in score, and you really utilize that here in defining the different elements of the Palm Royale and these crazy inhabitants. Was it, when you're writing, are you writing with specific instruments in mind?
Yeah, I for this show, it was going to be a really acoustic show, and so I was going to attach colors to characters using instruments, and you know, it's not completely strict, but generally, yeah. So, you know, Douglas's character, you know, he's Delacorte. So again, you know, his instrument is actually harmonica.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, the harmonica makes sound the same way that the accordion makes sound the same way that the clarinet. It's all of a family. Like all to me are related to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ricky Martin. Look, some of it, you know, you can't ignore what's right in front of you. Ricky Martin's instrument is the trumpet. He plays it on screen.
Yeah. And the fact that we, and you give us some Latin flair in the backdrop with Ricky Martin's character, with Robert.
Well, I mean, he brings it himself to the screen.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to support it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I actually chuckled because it was just so spot on and perfect with the musicality and with that character. Now, we actually have some recognizable, quote-unquote, needle drops throughout this, especially when we go back to 1949, and we're getting the post-World War II big band era. Now, how closely did you work with the music supervisor, with George, in order to, for the umbilical cord between the score and needle drops?
I'm used to working really closely with the music supervisor, and George on the show was amazing. And you also had a music supervisor named Ian, was terrific, and we would have a meeting where we'd discuss in advance all of the music for the show at the same time. So we would be, we'd go through the episode, and you know, this one's yours, this one's mine, this one's yours, and let's see who does this one. And also, as the show is progressing, I'm very, very aware of the songs that they want to choose and if they're able to license it or if they're not able to get them. I've worked with Abe going back a long ways as well, and he, you know, is a great lover of music and a lover of songs, and he knows, and we've worked together previously on projects where the score is moving, you know, very hand in glove from the source music into the score, and so I'm aware of the key that I'm going into, the tempo that I'm going into. And occasionally, I'm even writing an extra layer on top to give the music, the pre-recorded song, an extra kind of cinematic scope. And we did that on this show as well. You know, we added a little zhuzh to the Havana Nights scene when, mm-hmm. when Maxine enters the ballroom. You know, we kind of take it just a little bit further with the orchestra to make it even more wondrous for her, and to add a more of a dramatic support. And we do it a couple of times throughout the series. So yeah, very closely. And then, you know, as you spoke to the, you know, from one of the things that the style of the score being, you know, we could making the decision to have the style of the score be of the era, you know, then allows the music to kind of play, you know, relatively seamlessly, between whether it's a piece of score or it's a piece of needle drop. They were very strict about wanting music that was legitimately from the time period, that was kind of correct to the time
mm-hmm.
period. So you have the ability for the music to move, pretty effortlessly between score and licensed music, and there's no jarring stylistic difference.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just a beautiful meld, and I know that they have to take you away because you have another interview. I was given strict instructions, because I could talk to you for another hour about the scoring that you did here with Palm Royale.
I'll call back later, no problem. I'm happy to talk more if you want.
An amazing, amazing job, and I hope they put out a soundtrack because I want it.
But yeah, you can get it on all streaming platforms right now.
I want it on vinyl.
Oh, you're not alone. You're not alone.
Oh, Jeff, thank you so, so much. This has been short, but a delight.
Thank